You already know the deal. Join my Patreon to get access to one-on-one coaching with me and to join the conversation so you can ask your very own questions.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Well, very, very nice to be here. So thank you so much for taking the opportunity to hold the space for me and for families. My name is Alexa Ray Vallejo. I'm here in Portland, Oregon. I'm the founder of the Mindful Care Collective and then also the Mindful Nanny Collective. I've got more in the works for mindful couples, connection, and so forth, but I train caregivers of children in mindfulness practices. And we really talk about things like cognitive flexibility, the growth mindset that happens around that, social emotional learning. We talk about emotional regulation, what that looks like, but I'm a huge proponent of us embodying it first before we speak to it and modeling these behaviors, because I truly believe that the modeled behaviors are the most impactful behaviors, whether we're in a partnership with our partners, our friendships, our coworkers, our employees, and mostly the children that are looking up at us wondering what to do in this world and who the adult is that they're supposed to be and how they're supposed to fit in. So it's my passion to teach these things. And I work at different various corporations across the US, and I feel very blessed by COVID. It's accelerated my business plan. So now I'm able to teach all of these things virtually, which is really beautiful. But please give me a follow on Mindful Care Collective and the Mindful Nanny Collective on Instagram. I'd love to get to know you, and you can join one of my monthly memberships in yoga and mindfulness. It'd be lovely.
Awesome. So I'm going to start off. My first question is usually a pretty open blanket question. It's a softball just to throw it out there. What is mindfulness?
Really good question, because if you Google it, you'll come up with 1,000 different answers. And it's incredibly unique and personal to each person. But basically, it's connecting with the here and the now and this moment, not past thoughts, not future thoughts, but really in this moment, where do your feet land? Where are your toes against the floor in this moment? How are your sit bones feeling? What taste do you feel and sense into your mouth? What are you visually seeing and bringing in? At that point, you can really recognize the types of thoughts that you're streaming in moment by moment, and then where these thoughts are streaming from. Are they streaming from past thoughts or future thoughts or anticipation or excitement or joy or regret or anger? And then you just kind of bring it down into this beautiful, like, cyclical cycle of understanding yourself moment by moment. And if we're more aware of that, then we're more aware of how we're parenting, and we're more aware of the language we're speaking to others, or how we may be imposing on others. Or maybe we're aware of all of those things, but we just don't quite know how to change them because we don't sit with ourselves long enough. And mindfulness doesn't have to be sitting in this posture of Zen and you just drop in and you're this perfect Buddha. It's not how it works. It's not human. You can't take the humanity out of mindfulness. Mindfulness can be something where you're washing your hands and just paying attention to the soap and the water. Or you're taking 5 breaths before you respond to your child or before you respond to your partner because their parenting style is different than yours. But you learn to respond versus react, which I think is the most important thing we're responsible for as humans, essentially.
Mm. Yeah. I 100% agree with a lot of what you said. And the learning to respond as opposed to react is something that a lot of us really do struggle with. And I'd love, you know, you said something, I said a few things. One of the things that you said was the thoughts that are streaming into our minds. And I love that visual because part of how I think of mindfulness is, you know, the ability to kind of step outside of your kind of the things that you're connected to, that you're seeing as yourself, like that, like you are not your thoughts, but you can almost kind of like step outside and like in to watch your thoughts almost kind of objectively. If I were to try to put a very super, because I always think about it, like, because I always get the question with, you know, children, like, what does that mean? And a lot of times it will be things that, like, I know what they are, but like, how do I explain it? Like, one thing that just comes to mind, not even off topic, I'd ask me, like, oh, what's a hippie? And I had a really hard time really describing what it was.
Yeah.
And I tried, and I will just say that I failed because
we all fail every day.
And you know, and I know that I failed because when they were like, "Oh, so it's like this," I'm like, "Oh no, I'm complete. Just forget everything that I said." But anyways, for mindfulness, I would have tried to like explain like you're five, or explain to a 5-year old what is mindfulness. I might say, just paying attention closely to the things around you. Is that a close enough definition for a 5-year-old? How would you explain mindfulness to a 5-year-old? I guess that's my question. I know I didn't prep you for it.
Yeah. No, I love this because there's a bunch of different ways you can do this. And it's kind of like you can take this and capitalize on the play aspect of it. So you can think it like of compassion or finding your calm, and that can be your superpower. And you can talk about how finding a calm body in the midst of everything, you could tie it to nature and the storms that we have and how you can find your calm no matter what's happening. There's something always still happening or going on there. Let me make this a different way. There's different ways, obviously, to break it down and play with it. I do this in the kids' yoga and mindfulness classes. We work on these 10-week curriculums on calmness, kind, concentration, and so forth. But when we think about mindfulness, when I hear kids say it, it's like they're able to take a moment to breathe. Like that was maybe a 7-year-old that would say that. I was able to, when my bully approached me, I was able to take a moment and breathe and not take it personal. And that was a 7-year-old mm-hmm. statement. But if we think about like a 3-year-old or a 2-year-old, they're a little superhero that they're hanging on to, the big deep breath in and big deep breath out is this, or it's copying their parent or copying the model behavior they're seeing on our classes that they're taking. I'm just going to take my hands and I'm going to rest them on the tops of my knees and I'm going to take a big deep breath in and a deep breath back out. Or maybe it's, I feel angry, and they're able to state it. The fact that they're able to state it means something too. Mindfulness is so subjectively different, but when I describe it to a child, I describe it as their superpower to be able to connect to this inner landscape that's happening on. So if we look outside and then we take a moment to close our eyes and we can look within, we can recognize what's happening in the now. And kids are so smart. I've been working with kids for over 22 years. You don't have to do a lot of like micro definitions for them. They're going to create something that works for themselves if you play with it every day, if you mention it every day, if you embody it every day, you know? Mm-hmm. So I have a hard time describing what the definition would be like for a child, because depending on how you approach the situation and how you model that situation, that's everything that a child needs to learn.
Mm-hmm. And I love, you know, just the expression of like, I feel angry, I feel mad, like for a 3-year-old, like that is a lot of mindfulness, right? Because they're just learning about emotions and probably just in the past year have learned to label their emotion, label emotions and verbalize what emotions are, right? And so for them to be able to take a moment to notice their feeling and not blindly react, because that's what a lot of, you know, especially younger, 2 and younger with the, you know, with biting and hitting and this is biting and kicking, and that stuff is still pretty very common in 3s, 4s, and 5s, but especially in that 2 and younger, because you know they don't have necessarily the skill developed yet to really take a moment to stop, recognize how they're feeling, and then express it. I think
we can give them that tool of like when we hear them have anger, or I don't like to say that children are throwing a fit. I like to say that they're expressing themselves and it's an opportunity for a conversation to happen with them. Oh, I'm really seeing that you may be frustrated or angry. And we help them find their words over a period of time in that sweet stage that later on they can recognize, you know, when I'm angry. And you can almost see this gentle pause that's happening in the 3-year-old once they start to recognize. And they look up at you because they need to feel, you know, like they're safe and secure and they can be soothed by you because you see them and they see you and they feel seen and heard. And then they're able to, and maybe they still might get it out, but still it's that sweet recognition that's happening. And that's that. That's the click that you want to get to, because you're modeling and embodying the behavior. They see it. And I promise you, later on, by the time they're 4 years old, they're going to come over to you and say, mommy, daddy. They'll put their hand on your leg and say, take a big deep breath in. Take a big deep breath. Or they don't even say the words. They just do it. Mm-hmm. Because we did it. And the teaching lesson in itself, that's a beautiful exchange. And you're teaching one another, which is like the ultimate way to care give for children.
For sure. I always talk about, we're all on this journey together, you know, learning to navigate through our emotions and our world. And we may be a little bit farther in our journey because we're adults and we have more experience. So we're a little bit farther in our journey, but they are on their journey as well. And, you know, we have the opportunity to guide them on their journey while we are also, you know, growing and progressing on our journey. And children have such a spectacular gift. They are such a spectacular gift to us, because a lot of times they force us to grow and to look within and to become more mindful and to progress on our journey, rather than being complacent and, you know, just staying in our comfort zone. Children a lot of times will force that out of us. Now my question to you, let's back it up a little bit, because we started talking about how to teach it to children. A big part is, you said, is modeling. But what if we as the adult have a hard time being mindful, have a hard time being present, have, you know, we react with our big, strong emotions. Maybe it was the way that our, you know, the way that we were parented or experiences that we've had in life. And so that's why we're reacting the same way. Maybe it is the same experience, but we just get triggered. You know, how do we as the adult become more mindful? And especially if you can add to your answer, during busy times like the holidays, or, you know, we're thrown off our game because we're having inconsistencies, talk to us about that. Like,
absolutely. And first of all, we're human, so we all come from stories that we only know. We come from experiences that we've lived in the same 24 hours as other people, but they were completely different, right? And I think it all starts with compassion and kindness. That's where it starts first. Having compassion for yourself, slowing down, first recognizing, taking ownership, taking a pause, reflecting on what you just heard yourself say and the feeling you got from saying it. And we may not apologize in that moment, and even though we know we should, because we just haven't quite gained that tool yet. But if we first start being compassionate with ourselves and kind with ourselves, taking a moment to pause, we can always create the room to look at our child or to look at our family members, our partner, our friendships, the people we're leading, and say, I'm sorry, I messed up. I apologize. You know, I'm feeling frustrated, and then naming it, like kind of seeing yourself, soothing yourself, recognizing yourself, knowing that your feelings were really emotions. First of all, in 2020, we're just now learning about emotions and giving ourselves, there's a really good book, it's called The Permission to Feel, and giving ourselves that permission to feel. There's a second really good book, The Body Keeps the Score. Go read that book. You're going to recognize how our body hangs onto these emotions, and they will manifest themselves in other ways. Same with our words. How kind are yourself? How, if you take a mental note during the day and you notice how many times you were kind to yourself versus not kind to yourself, you're going to see the same patterns happening with the children you care for and the coworkers you're working with. And it just takes a mindful pause of compassion and communicating with yourself, spending some time to really truly get real with yourself in a loving way.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna add that, like, there's a different, you know, being very mindful about how those thoughts that we are streaming into our minds, those automatic thoughts, you know, is it, you know, there's a difference between guilt and shame, right? We shouldn't, you know, are the automatic thoughts when we make a mistake, is it shame? Yeah. That are we shaming ourselves, or is it guilt? You know, shame, and I'll kind of like talk about the two differences. Shame is when it's a difference of like, oh man, like I'm a bad parent because like, I'm such a bad mom. I'm comparing myself to like Instagram. Like, I can't do this. Like, why can't I do, like, there must be something wrong with me. It's, shame has to do with you as a person feeling bad, as a person feeling you're not enough as a person. Mm-hmm. Guilt on the other hand, is about you, about this action, right? Like, ah, man, like, I forgot the lunchbox today. Like, ah, I messed up. I made a mistake. You know, like, that wasn't a very mindful thing to do, right?
Yeah.
You know, even if he's like, ah, that was a stupid thing to do, right? It's better than saying, ah, I'm a stupid person or I'm a stupid parent for not getting it. It's because it's on the action and not on,
yes,
you know, who you are as a person. And then once you start to, and a lot of times that shame comes from us being judged as, you know, just, I mean, I want to say not even just as like just our parents, but in our society too, because I do think that we have a culture that kind of that influences that, but definitely the way that we were brought up and raised, mm-hmm, in the culture, specifically in our immediate family, mm-hmm, has an impact on that too. So I just want to add to that. It just be very mindful of the thoughts that are streaming into your mind.
100%. And maybe what you're watching and what you're consuming, and just like, yeah, the work, whatever work we put in, we see fruit of, you know, it bears fruit in some capacity or another. Same with our thoughts. And we can, you know, have our thoughts are not our reality. And we can choose to get curious about our actions, and that there should be a time and place for that where you process. Compassion and curiosity, I think, are some of the best tools you could possibly give yourself. But, you know, yeah, just being really kind to yourself, being gentle, being nice to yourself, and then recognizing that you're doing your best in this moment. And in the next breath, you can become a whole new person. You can let go of that other person. You can always begin again in this moment.
And what does that look like? That moment to moment, right? So like, okay, in this moment, I'm shaming myself. I feel bad about something I did or didn't do. I'm not enough. And okay, so now I'm at the point, I just realized, I'm having these thoughts and they're affecting me, but I'm still affected, yeah, in this moment. Even I've noticed, but how would I get on the other side of feeling like a different person so I can have different, you know, yeah, I can have actions and responses and have a different way of being, you know, what are some things that you would suggest doing?
Pausing, take a moment, recognize that you're feeling that, then stop your thoughts. That way you don't attach yourself to a thought and then become your thought. You go on this whole journey and story. Instead, pause where you're at, regroup, ground in through this body that you inhabit and that you carry. Feel your feet beneath the ground. Use your breath. It is one of the most powerful tools that creates not only time, but space and processing, and also supports your amygdala in your brain. If you can use your breath, taking 5 deep inhalations in through the nose for an equal count of 5, just kind of pause there, equal exhalations back out through the nose for 5. That's not for adults. You would, kids have a smaller lung capacity, so it'd be about 12 seconds. Deep breath in, deep breath back out. Just want to mention that. But that creates time. It creates space. Your amygdala flies down, comes back down. You get all of the blood that goes back into your fight or flight back here from your logic, and it starts to come back. It takes about 20 minutes if you're highly charged and angry. You have those hot sensations in your body. Your body's on fire. You have to cool it down. Give it some breath. Take some pause. Say it out loud if you need to. You know what? Mom has to go to the bathroom. I need some personal time just for a few minutes. You guys are safe. You guys are good. You guys got your toys. I'm going to take a minute. There's nothing wrong with that. Also, you're modeling that behavior. You're modeling that behavior. Let them make a mess for a minute. You got to go gather yourself so you're not making a mess of their mind, but you're just kind of connecting, right? Like, you're not doing more damage. You're just pausing for a moment. And it comes, the more you practice it, like any other muscle in the brain, the faster you use it. I've overcome PTSD. I've overcome anxiety and depression. I've worked through a very trauma-filled childhood that was, I knew I wanted to make a difference because I chose to get real with myself, because I learned over a period of time that instead of shaming myself, I could have compassion and love and create space for myself to pause, recognize my humanity, have a little grace, apologize if I need to, try again. And I think that practicing that over a period of time has completely changed my life in every single aspect. And I know that parents deep down want to do their very best. No matter what you're gonna do your very best. The only thing you have to support is your health and your love for yourself and your compassion for yourself. It's the rest will just flow from that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I really love that. So let's go back to the kids now.
Yeah.
Talking how to help them. So now I'm kind of have some of my technique down, man, not perfect, because again, the goal isn't to be perfect every day. The goal is to improve every day, be an improvementist, not a perfectionist.
Love that.
I had to have my love. But you're working on it, right? You're improving. So now you've already given us a couple. So you said model it in front of children, and even as you're working through, and I always talk about, like, that's actually, you know, it doesn't have to be, oh, because I don't have these skills, there's no way I can teach it to my child. Them seeing you on your journey is just as valuable as you already taking that journey maybe 5 or 10 years ago. Them seeing you frustrated, overwhelmed in emotion and working through it, maybe even sometimes messing up and blowing up and overreacting and then coming back and repairing and apologizing. So you're modeling that, like, all of that is super valuable too. Yeah. And so if you're out there and you're just like, I don't have these skills, so how do I teach it to my child? Just know that the more that you learn and grow and progress on your journey, just by and allowing, being vulnerable and allowing your children to kind of see your growth and allowing you to, and you allowing yourself to apologize and not feel like you have to be this imagined, non-existent, perfect parent.
That's not going to happen. That's unrealistic. That's not the reality of the world. It's just not the reality of humanity either. So you might as well just, you know, begin again.
And even the parents that you might be comparing yourself to that you think are perfect aren't perfect, especially if your knowledge is only mostly what you see off of social media.
100%. Right? Yeah. We all know that nobody can get the perfect selfie the first time. Nobody can get the perfect parents. Nobody can get the perfect entrepreneur, of course. You know, it just doesn't come that way. That's not a part of life. That's the beauty of life, is that you learn through experience. Like, you get this opportunity to go and try it out. Oh, oops, I failed. All right, try again. You know, and like, when you share those failures with other parents, you're empowering them to try. And the best thing you can do is empower other people to just try and to get curious about it and to be kind to themselves. That's not so bad. Like, everybody has the capacity to do that. We could do that together, you know?
Yeah. So what are some other things? You mentioned yoga. How do you incorporate yoga into mindfulness?
Oh, I love it. It's so much fun, especially for little ones. I work with toddlers. I typically work for ages 4 through 12, and it's really, really fun because we'll talk about the big, deep yoga. Like, we go on an adventure into the forest, and we become we get our imaginary backpacks on. First of all, the guided imagery that's happening that entire time. We're taking our mind somewhere else other than where we're at right now. And that is spectacular, to play with the mind, see what kids bring up when they're like, oh yeah, I see a lion. Oh my goodness, I see a star in the sky. Oh my gosh, we can become a five-pointed star. Open up that heart, take up space. You're the only human that there is. This feels so good. Really shine that heart right here. And then exhale, drop it down. Like, you can go on this whole adventure that's playing, including them in this sense of play and weaving in social and emotional skills the whole entire time. Before you know it, you stepped out of a 15-minute class with your kids. Not only did you play with them, bond them, see them, help them, soothe them, maybe even figure out what emotions they're hanging on to, but you just gave them tools to breathe through it, and they didn't even realize it, but you're going to notice it in 3 weeks. Always within 3 weeks. Oh, and like, they'll send you, like, I get these pictures all the time of kids just like showing their different poses because during class they were so angry. You know, during virtual school, they're really feeling it. And they got down to like lion's pose. And it's so silly, and it's perfect for them because they found something to feel for themselves. But you're also teaching them a skill that you don't always have to get wrapped up in these thoughts in this present moment. You can find a place in a place of uncomfortability when the storm is going around you. You can find your calm. You can find, you can feel your body. You can connect with your body. You understand that you have a body. We live so externally that I don't think we talk enough about the shoulders that stack over the ankles, the toes beneath the ground, the tongue, how much tenseness, like how much you're hanging on to in the muscles around your eyes and your jawline, and you don't even realize it. Softening.
I'm trying to let go of my face right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I talk about it with the kids, and they slowly start. And I know the first time people try yoga with their kids, it's a hot mess. It is a hot mess. Nobody wants to do it. They're all over the place. That's the point. You still embody it. You still model it. And I guarantee you by the end of your 10 weeks, they're literally in Shavasana, which is laying down with a little blanket on for a full 4 minutes. If you got 12-year-olds, they'll do it for 7 and just lay there. Could you imagine? They get to feel the presence of stillness, connectedness, going somewhere in their mind, if they're a butterfly, or if they're going to the jungle, or they're doing whatever that they can access at any given time when something else is going on in life. If mom and dad are yelling and it's a toxic home, they can learn that they can sit in their body and kind of start to tune that out in guided imagery and in what therapists sometimes call like a healthy disassociation, in a place where you can kind of start managing your own emotions so you don't get caught up in the story of others. Or what's happening. And it's very hard to do as adults, but we can teach kids young now what that looks like. And they can feel that sense of ease and joy when they create a space like that. I do that with adults, you know, we do that in a loving kindness meditation. And you've got high corporate executives that are about to go into a huge meeting all week long, and you allow them space to be somewhere else than where they're at, feel the sense of joy, then open up their eyes, look around. Look for joy in the room. What brings you joy? Is it the light, the way the light filters in through the room? Is it the knob on the little, you know, the cabinet that you have? What is it? Breathe in joy. Let yourself feel it. Breathe back out. And they can access that at any given time. If a child needs to focus on concentration in the classroom, if they've got something like a worry stone, or they have a piece of art that they can find and that's their concentration point, and they can focus on that and breathe in 5 times, noticing the art on the wall, just resets the brain, and they can use that as their tool. That's what I've had one kid use. He had a really hard time paying attention in his math class. He could have cared less what was going on in that class, and he would just tune out. And instead of, you know, we kind of normalized it for him. I normalized it because I'm dyslexic and math is not my jam. And so we really worked together on what does finding a calm body mean for you? What does it mean, you know, to find something in the room that brings you joy? And he ended up using that as his tool when he felt distracted, and he noticed, he caught himself, he paused, recognized that he was distracted, was no longer paying attention to the teacher, and then found this one basketball picture of Kobe Bryant that he loved. And he learned that Kobe Bryant practiced mindfulness, and he was like, that basketball. And he would listen to the basketball through the picture. And he'd do it 5 times, and then he right back into the teacher. And that was his tool. It was the coolest thing to hear what kids come up with.
Yeah. I love too how you, you know, used his, it wasn't just like, here's a tool that you're going to use. Like he was a part of creating the tool too. And you used his interest, which is something that I always try to preach. Like even today on my Instagram, I was preaching it about, you know, letting a child be a part of the process of really as much as possible, especially if it's going to affect them. And just using his interests, it's Kobe Bryant. Then it was a connected interest of the mindfulness and the Kobe Bryant and the ball and hearing the and the rhythm of the ball. Like that was beautiful to hear. It was beautiful to hear. I'm going to ask now if we can do an exercise.
Yeah, let's do it.
I love to experience an exercise. Last time we did it with headphones. And so I would, if someone's out there and you're listening, I would suggest that you use headphones. If you can, if you're in a place where you can do it. If not, then, you know, I'm not doing it with headphones right now, so I'll give you my review after these variants. But I'm ready for it. I'm gonna be quiet and just let you talk. Oh, did you set like lighting? Did you change the lighting?
No, somehow I pressed a button and the TV. So I have a whole like situation because I run all my virtual classes. This is my little virtual, which I just painted the room yesterday. Anyways, the TV turned on and it's a blue color. You can see it.
Okay. I was like, oh snap, she's getting in the microwave.
No. Like, okay. I wish I did. I have my yoga hair and no makeup on, which is awesome. Okay. but that's another thing to get mindful about. How does it feel in your body? Anyways. yeah, let's get started into a little practice. So wherever you are, wherever you land, of course, don't be doing this while you're driving. You don't want to close your eyes. But check in with your body. Notice where you're at. Maybe you could even pause right here, create a little comfortable space for yourself. Maybe that's on a cushion. Maybe that's on a chair. Get comfortable because you deserve it and you're worthy of that space and that time. This will be like 7 minutes. So it's nothing, it's not a huge commitment, so don't worry. And mindfulness is nothing that's religious, so I'm not going to be infusing anything that's religious here. This is for all folks. And that given said, or that being said, let's go ahead and find a mindful posture. So when I talk about a mindful posture in my mindfulness training courses, we talk about really settling into the body. And so once you find that comfortable position, if you're sitting on a cushion, I really advise that you kind of allow the pelvis to tilt forward so your knees are below your hips. And the funny thing about the body, especially when we're new to our mindfulness practice, is that we can get this paraspinal fatigue that a lot of people talk about. They're like, ah, I can't sit in a meditation because my back hurts. Totally understand. Lay down then, or tilt the pelvis forward, knees down away from the hips. On the next inhale, just go ahead and draw the shoulders up towards the ears. Just give yourself a good squeeze here. If you're hanging on to extra tension, squeeze your biceps, your arms, your forearms, even your fists. And then exhale, release everything. Let the shoulders drop, yeah, down towards the hips. If you're ever feeling really tense, a really great thing to do is just what we did there. So inhale, squeezing the shoulders up towards the ears, squeeze the biceps, forearms, fists, give it a squeeze. And then exhale, slowly release, let the shoulders drop down towards the hips. Good. Awesome. Good. And then go ahead and let the chin just kind of melt down towards the collarbones. And then maybe you close the eyes here. Either that or lower the gaze. And that way you just can kind of land into your inner landscape versus being distracted by any visuals. Good, just like that, as your mindful body. And then you can soften into your breath. Kind of gently start noticing your breath. Notice how the breath travels in through the nose, past the upper lip, expands through the throat, the chest, and the low belly. And then exhale just to soften the whole body. Notice the waves of the chest, gently rising and falling. Good. Let's invite in a more deep and meaningful breath, a cleansing breath, if you will. So take a full exhale out through the nose or the mouth. Good. And then on the next inhale, take a deep breath in through the nose for one. Notice the ribs kind of expand here for two. Low belly melts away from the spine for three. And then as you exhale, let the belly melt back in towards the spine. The ribs knit back together. Let that breath just sweetly escape the nose or the mouth. Good, just like that. Let's do that four more times. Deep breath in. Maybe you bring it in for an equal count of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Pause at the top. And then exhale, equal count of 5 back out. 3, 2, 1. Good. Do that three more times. Deep inhalations in through the nose. Really fill the whole low belly. Nourish the body here on the inhale. And then let go of anything that no longer serves you on the exhale. Just soften the whole body here. Good. Two more times on your own deepest breaths yet. Deep breath in through the nose to nourish. Deep breath back out, let it all go. Good, do that one more time. Deep breath in. And exhale, just sigh it all out. No one else is around, who cares, let it go. Good. Just keep the eyes closed here. Notice that we go from this mode of doing to simply being. Let the left shoulder fall heavy over the left sit bone. Really drop it down towards the left sit bone. And then maybe we breathe in through the right shoulder and let that shoulder fall just a little bit heavier down towards the right sit bone. Bring some focus, attention, awareness towards the muscles around your eyes. Breathe in through those muscles and then as you exhale, soften the muscles. Maybe even create space between the upper and the lower jaw here. good. So we only have 5 more minutes left in this meditation. We're just here landing in. Just kind of noticing and checking in with the body. If it's your first time today or this week where you've really truly taken the time to ask yourself how you're doing, do that here. Maybe you just give yourself 1, 2, 3 words. And then let those words simply dissolve. You've given them permission to feel seen and heard, and then now you can just let them go as if there were clouds in the sky. Good. And now maybe you bring into the field of your awareness a few of the things that stand out most to you that happened yesterday and last week. Nothing too highly charged here. We're just kind of noticing what starts to come up, what the body's remembering, and we're simply observing it. And notice if there's any feelings or emotions associated with these events that are showing up in your mind. I'm just kind of recognize those here. On your next exhale, simply let all of those dissolve. Let them go away into the field of your awareness. Again, as if there were clouds in the sky. And now breathe in. Maybe a sense of gratitude for those particular events the last few days. Or maybe even just checking in with yourself right now in this moment for taking the time to carve out, to spend time with yourself, just to check in. Out of any and all the other places you could be, you're here right now. Make sure you find 2 or 3 more words of gratitude just for yourself. And now bring into your mind's eye someone you're truly grateful for. Perhaps it's a partner or a family member, a coworker. Maybe it's a child. And just offer them a word of gratitude. Allow them to receive that. Just in this nice shared humanity, in this moment from heart to heart with this individual. Just recognizing that we're trying our best. We're just here in this moment together. And then breathe back out, let that gently dissolve into the mind's just existence. Let it sit there in the subconscious. It's there to feel seen and heard. And then let it go. On the next inhale, bring in a form of intention. Wherever you're at, whatever time of day that you're listening to this, bring in yourself towards yourself a intentional word or 3 or 4. Set an intention for yourself. Perhaps it's, I choose to breathe in 5 times before I respond to my children for the remainder of the day today. I choose to take a pause. Or perhaps it's, I will show myself 3 words of kindness today at breakfast, at lunch, and at dinner. Now in your mind's eye, picture yourself actually fulfilling these intentions for yourself. Maybe it's you choose to mindfully eat or mindfully walk outside today. Or I picture myself drinking lots of water, nourishing my body. Whatever it is, it's yours. Let it be there. And now in your mind's eye, create the feelings and sensations you would feel if you actually finished these intentions. If you put the work into them, what would be the fruits of your labor? What feelings are associated with the space that you're creating? And breathe in through the nose here and then breathe back out. Just kind of honoring this practice for yourself. Let everything else dissolve in your mind and then just come into being in this moment. This is some of the hardest work we'll ever do. So picture yourself in this moment, sitting in the place you are in time and space. If this was challenging for you and your mind wandered off into future moments or past moments, know that that's completely normal. The one and only thing you can do is begin again. You could try this same meditation later today. And then just pause. Bring yourself back to the breath. Take a deep breath in through the nose and a deeper breath back out. And just picture yourself even honoring yourself and showing yourself gratitude in this moment for taking the time to practice this. And begin to wiggle the fingertips and the toes. Just bring a nice sensation back into the body. Or stay here longer. Whatever you're needing. Something I talked about earlier today was taking a moment to look around in the room that you're in. So look around the room. Notice what in this room brings you joy. Why does it bring you joy? It's the colors, sensations, the windows outside, the trees, whatever it may be. Let your body feel that on a few inhalations and exhalations. The rest of the world's always waiting for you. So know that you can always ground in through finding something that brings you joy and ease. Good job. That's hard. It's hard just to sit with yourself and not get distracted and go on a whole adventure in your mind. But we can start to tame our thoughts a little bit, bring it back, rein it in, and begin again. But kindly and gently. I always call it escorting yourself, just like I would a child, escorting yourself back to the breath moment by moment with kindness and compassion. Take the hand of yourself, bring it back to the breath. Just begin again.
I love that. There were some things that I can't say that my mind didn't wander at all. My mind definitely did wander a couple of things because I would notice something about how I was feeling. And then I would notice something about me noticing something. Of course, you said bravo. Will we get this recording? It was lovely. It was really great. Oh, look, you got fans. Yeah. Hello. So it's going to be in, I honestly might just take that piece. That's cool with you, Alexa Ray, and as a whole nother episode in itself. Because I really do just to go back to that. But let me talk about that for a little bit and just kind of what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
And what felt really powerful to me about it, not only, which I guess is that's what mindfulness is, right? It was not only an exercise that I was engaging in with my body, but I was engaging with my mind as mm-hmm. well, especially when you started talking about the meaningful breaths and you started talking about like the gratitude and setting intentions. And that really, it was, a lot of times when we think about these things, a lot of what's driving us is whatever our state is at that time. The emotion, whatever, however we're feeling kind of at that time is what's driving us. And so like that was, and will very much likely probably even drive decisions that we make, which ultimately will drive the direction our lives go in, right? And so like, it's this car, and there's one of my like old teachers in my master's program she didn't make it up, but she used to call it like, whenever she do mindfulness activities, she'd talk about like taming the monkey mind. And like your mind is like an elephant that like, if you can't like, and I'm probably not going to explain it very well, maybe you've heard the analogy and can clean up a little bit, but like, if you can't tame it, like you can't just tame it. Like when you sit on the elephant, like there's work to be done. Like your mind is more powerful than what you are. And so like taking control of the mind and then with some like thoughtful intention behind it, it's like I'm actually in control of the car that I'm driving. And so now I can choose to take it where I want to, as opposed to, it's almost like, when you're not thinking about these things and you're not engaging it in like a mindfulness activity that you just exercise, that you just did with us, it's almost like the car is, I don't choose the speed at which the car goes. I can maybe control like how I'm steering it, but I don't have full control control of the car. So mm-hmm. I'm not really in control of where it goes, and I'm kind of reacting and not.
Do you even know who you are in this moment? Yeah. Like, why do you like the things that you like? Do you actually really like, so like, you know, those little tangerine oranges, those little cuties? Yeah. Okay. How fast do you eat those?
It's like a bite.
You're right. They're just gone, right? Because it's amazing how fast I can go. I challenge everybody listening, including yourself, and maybe you even want to record yourself doing it because it is interesting and you can hold the space for other people. Take 5 minutes to open up that orange. Take 2 minutes to look at it, to hear it, to really observe it, to smell it, to poke a little hole in it, then smell it, and then peel it and listen to yourself peeling it. And then, I know it sounds ridiculous, and then just hold it up to your lip and just let it sit on the bottom of your lip. And you'll notice like different things start coming up. It's your taste buds, it's your sensations, you're eager, you're excited, you're all these emotions come up. Could you imagine? You would never feel any of those. You would never make a relationship with any of those emotions otherwise, because usually like me, I consume it in two bites. Just real quick, in the car, in between yoga classes and teaching parents, done. Didn't even think about where it came from. Didn't even think about the hands that grew it. Didn't even think about how it got perfectly packaged in the store all the way here for me to consume. And honestly, when I take my time to eat it, I finish half the orange and I'm full. I don't even need the rest. Can you imagine if we explored our emotions like that, or our own hand, the things that some of us were born with that we didn't even earn? Like it's amazing. Or if we looked at our partners and the children that we care for, if we looked at them with that much just awe and wonder and curiosity, it's pretty fascinating. And let alone emotions. Who's driving the car? Who's driving the car? Oh, what's driving the car are my future thoughts, because I got to get to this class. I got to do this. That all of my decisions are based off of that. The way that I respond to somebody because I'm in a rush, because I'm responding to them over text and I'm not actually taking my time with them. Though, you know, my objective is somehow weaved in there because I've got to get here. So you got the person at the grocery store or the gas station that's just kind of angry, and you don't have to take it personal because you have no idea where the trajectory of their thinking is or where they're headed. Or maybe they just came from the hospital because somebody died. You know, like, you don't know what someone's story is. So you might as well take a moment to learn what your story is in this moment and take some accountability. And that can start with mindfulness.
You know what, too? And as you're describing, like, the tangerine, I was thinking, like, that's totally what children, that's how a child would open up a tangerine. And in terms, they may not be very present in acknowledging their, you know, subconscious with their emotions, because those are, you know, brand new concepts. Yeah. Like, in terms of like them being present in the, like, the physical world, and like, children are way better than us adults at doing that. And I wonder, you know, like, why do we become, in terms of like the physical world, why do we become less mindful in that aspect of exploring the orange? And my thought is that, like, you know, we feel like we're busy adults and we've seen the orange a million times before. And so our brain just like, okay, like, it's an orange, and it's like, okay, but like, what's the thing, right? Yeah. Eat it, the yoga class, right? And that's what our brain does. That's likely, that's a thing that we need to do for survival. But like, how do we still?
We're always searching for something that actually is obtainable right here. That's the magic of life, is being in this present moment. And we're like rushing to the yoga class and we're drinking all the water and we're making all the things happen because we want the objective that we want to check off all the boxes. I was a good mom today. I did my workout. I was a good mom. The kitchen is clean. I was a good wife. I was good, you know, whatever it might be. And instead, the magic of the moment is right here and now, in this present moment that we do not get back. This is the only moment. And we can find magic in it if we look for it. We can get on a child's level and open their eyes to the same world if we want to. And then what else are the benefits of that? Are slowing down our communication, actively listening when somebody else is talking versus getting lost into your own thought, your own story, and you're way over here and you're not actually in alignment with what the other person is talking about because you got so excited, and that's okay. But we have to pause so we can truly listen to other people so that we can understand, why do we have the biases we have? Well, why do I believe that? Like, when was the last time, for the listeners here, when was the last time you questioned what your beliefs were? Why do you believe them? Do you believe them because your parents told you about them? Society does? You know, your favorite pop star, movie star? Because one teacher did? What else is out there? Explore why this orange tastes good, why you believe this, why you want to parent this way, why you want to love your child the best you can today. Why is that? You know, it's just interesting.
And maybe it's you know, we already have our story built, we've already created our story, our programming, and so we're just running the program while young children are still discovering this story. Yeah. And so they are figuring out, well, why do I like this orange? Or do I like this orange? Or what does it feel, you know? And so, like, is it an orange even? You know, they might even, this one, but does it, you know, will it look the same on the inside? Are there any subtle differences? And we have the tendency to really miss a lot because of the stories that we tell ourselves as adults. That I think we can learn from children in terms of their openness to, you know, create the story in the present moment.
Yes. 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 I could have said that better. That was really beautifully put. That made my whole heart just so happy to hear somebody else say that. That's awesome. You get it. You get it.
Well, then I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. I'm going to end on that note.
This is such an honor to share space with you.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?